You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Yo, however, you're not with Phil Williams today. Phil's on the road. I'm Scott Buttram from the Trustful Tribune, filling in for Will, filling in for Phil, and happy to be here. On the other side, controlling everything is Boomer. Boomer, what day is it, man?
Oh, you know what today is? It is hump day. So we got to play it.
Go
play
it.
The sound set.
Go with it.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo! Got to play it every week, sir.
Why do I feel like we're doing a drive time show here with from the 90s? That's what it felt. I love that. Now that we've established it's hump day, hey, we're going to jump right in with our first guest. We know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I want to invite into the show a Christian author from Cullman, Alabama, Karis Snyder. Karis, are you with us?
I am with you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on. And in such short notice, we've had you on Tribune Unscripted and Trustful, and you and I were emailing back and forth this morning, and I was thinking, you know what? I still need an extra guest for the radio show this afternoon. This fits perfectly, and we already know your message, and we know it's a great one. So happy to have you on Right Side Radio with us this afternoon so you can talk a little bit about this. Post-pandemic, mental health has become a major issue for a number of reasons. Let's talk a little bit, Karis, about the impact that the pandemic had on children and what they're dealing with right now.
I love that question, and you're right. It impacted them greatly, children of all ages. You've got four-year-olds all the way up to high school. And back, there was about 2 years of time there where they were somewhat isolated. They were out of their routines. They were out of the classroom. They were away from their friends.
Right.
And it was a constant time for many of them, maybe of trauma. School was a safe place for a lot of our children, and their home was not always that safe place, and that's where they were kind of stuck. So now we're seeing for a lot of our children that anxiety is not just impacting us as adults.
Right.
It's the number one mental health struggle for our kids of all ages. And so they're not sure how to cope. They're not sure. You know, they may be wondering, what if something else bad happens? What if I get pulled out of school again?
Right.
And so it's a constant living on edge and this being overly nervous and afraid about what might happen. And that's heartbreaking for us. So what we need to do is help our kids learn how to cope with these difficult things mentally right now.
Right. We're seeing mental health manifest itself with our young people dealing with so many just bizarre issues across the spectrum, things that we never thought, or at least I never thought I would have to sit down and talk with my teenager about and say, look, some of this stuff you're hearing, this just isn't real. Are you seeing that in your work and as you go around promoting your books?
You know, I am seeing that. And, you know, they're getting a lot of confusing messages too, right?
Right.
I mean, they are being bombarded with all of these ideologies that are just not based on truth.
Right.
And then they are being caused to feel afraid that if they stand up for truth, if they stand up and just say, you know, I don't agree with that statement, then that impacts them mentally, because they're afraid of how that's going to make them look. And you know, as a teenager, they want to be accepted.
Right.
They want to be a part. And so the world is kind of playing in on that. And so that's where our kids and our teens need us to come in beside them and acknowledge that this is a hard season right now. There's no getting around that.
Mm-hmm.
But just to help them to know that you're not alone. Here is some practical skills you can use. Here's some wording that you can know. And they just have to know sometimes when we stand up for truth, our pastor says that we're being winsome weirdos. We're going to be a weirdo, but we're standing for the truth, and it's going to benefit them in the long run.
That's right. And we're told to set ourselves apart from the world. So
right.
That's exactly where we're supposed to be going with these things, to God.
Yes, that's right. And we need to remember that it's okay for them to say it's hard, it's scary, what if I'm alone? And to not dismiss those things for them, but to let them know that we understand that all of that is hard and difficult, and that we're going to help them as best that we can navigate through those difficult waters, and to know that God allowed them to be kids and teens for such a time as this. And so our role is to equip them for the battles that they're going to face.
Let's talk about two of the books you've written, Anxiety Elephants for Girls and Anxiety Elephants for Boys. And I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I happen to personally know adults who have read your Anxiety Elephant books and found them quite helpful for them. So I don't know that we should center too much on girls and boys because these books are wonderful for anybody that may be dealing with a little anxiety in their life. Can you tell us more about them?
Sure. So the Anxiety Elephants books for girls and boys are 90-day devotionals for that tween age group, your 8 to 12-year-olds. But I have found that 13 and 14-year-olds love them. Even adults, like you said,
yes,
love them as well. and the basis of this book is I really take these young children, these young teens, through stories throughout my own life, my own childhood as a teenager, of how anxiety affected me. We didn't talk about it back then. We didn't really acknowledge what was going on. So what we do in this devotional is give them a scripture, acknowledge that anxiety, and then give an action step, one tiny thing that you can do to face that anxiety through the day so that it does not steal your life away. You're able to face it, move through it, and live the life that God has called you to. And there's even a spot in those books where they can journal, they can write their thoughts, write their prayer requests, or even draw if they're more of a visual person. And so my own daughters, I have a 10-year-old and a 14-year-old, they inspire me to write those books because they saw my adult Anxiety Elephants book. And they said one day to me, "Mom, can you write a book like this with words that we can understand?" And God really used them to open up my eyes to see, hey, let's not wait till they're adults to equip them.
Right.
Let's do that right now. And as I see things unfold in this world, I'm understanding more and more why he compelled me to get that message out to the world right now.
And I was remiss for mentioning the Anxiety Elephants for Girls and Boys. And you're right, I should have brought up the original Anxiety Elephants, the 31-day devotional that you wrote. We also have talked about the Carline devotional in the first time we interviewed you. How does that connect? Is there a book for the Carline devotional out yet? And is it similar to your Anxiety Elephant 31-day devotion? Compare and contrast that.
Sure. So Carline Mom Devotional is going to be a little bit different. It's a 100-day devotional for mamas who are working hard to get everybody everywhere they need to go. And Scott, I know you and I talked, I need to write one for the dads.
I can't believe you haven't added dads to the title. I was a Carline dad.
We're going to work on that. We're going to get that too. But so the Carline Mom is going to be more focused on everything that moms deal with, from the overwhelm, stress, yes, some anxiety, trying to find their space in those friend groups, you know, wondering what is my purpose after our kids are all grown up and we're not doing their laundry anymore, those type of things.
Right.
Whereas the Anxiety Elephants devotional, it focuses completely on anxiety. So Carline Mom is going to definitely deal with those issues, but there's going to be additional devotions in there, not just geared towards anxiety. And because I live my life still, I'm about to head to Carline right now. Because I live my life there, that was another book idea that God kind of led me to write. And so that one is going to come out August 29th. So when the fall school year starts, all of those mamas who are listening right now are going to want to get that book to have with them while they're waiting in that Carline or when they get up in the mornings to drink their coffee. It's just going to be a fun, encouraging book that I can't wait to get into the hands of moms everywhere. But Anxiety Elephants, you can go grab right now and read, especially now as everyone is really trying to focus more on their mental health and to acknowledge that maybe we're all dealing with a little bit of anxiety. And so how to respond to that in a healthy way.
Right. And we should mention that book is available at Walmart, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and I'm a Kindle user, Amazon Kindle. You can download it for your Kindle.
That's right.
As I'm listening to you talking about this, and you and I have talked before, because my wife is a school teacher, you know, I was the car line dad. So I kind of learned a lot about what moms deal with. That's about 40, 45 minutes, sometimes an hour out of your afternoon to just sit there and wait on your kid to get out of school. You may want to market these books together. My 16-year-old started driving to school 2 weeks ago, so that took away the anxiety of having to be in car line every day at 2:30, but it has replaced it with a whole new anxiety that nobody prepared me for as I watched her drive away for the first time by herself. So you just may want to go with both of those books, a package deal.
I like where you're going, and I may have to follow up with you because I have a 14-year-old that's turning 15 soon, and she said to me, Mom, I get to learn how to drive this year.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's right. So I felt a little flutter in my heart as she was talking about getting behind the wheel, and she said, it's got to be like driving a golf cart, right? And I was like, oh. No. We have a long way to go.
We got a long way to go. We've talked before, and you know, because you are friends with my son and daughter-in-law, that my son and my daughter are 20 years apart. So that's just long enough to feel like you're raising an only child for a second time and to have forgotten all the anxiety I went through with him. But it's a challenging moment, and I think your books will come in very helpful. Karis, I wanted to mention to our audience here that you do a lot of public speaking. You do a lot of coaching with people. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you might be able to help a group or someone who's listening in on the show today?
Absolutely. So as a speaker, I love talking to groups of women. I do conferences, retreats. I get the opportunity to go into schools, public schools, and Christian schools, and talk on a plethora of topics. I do mainly focus when I go into schools, helping students deal with that anxiety. I also do teacher trainings as well, so they can kind of recognize some things that they might can add to their classroom. And part of those school visits that I do are author visits, where I go in and talk to students of all ages about what that book process looks like, what it's like to work with publishers, how the book goes from a manuscript to a real hardback book in your hands. So those are some fun things that I do. And when I speak with women's groups or churches or businesses, I also talk about that mental health aspect, but also how can we deal with stress? What are some things we can do as moms that feel overwhelmed, that feel alone, that just want a community in their life? They just want to know that they're following the passion and the calling that God's given them. And that's what I do as a coach. If you feel stuck and you know that you need to move forward, that there's more that you need to be doing with your life to live a life fulfilled, but you're not quite sure how to get there, as a coach, I help walk you through that, how to do those steps one at a time. And so if people want more information, they can go to my website, which is Karis Snyder, CarisSnider.com, to get more information, and I would love to just connect with people for speaking or coaching, however best I can serve.
Karis, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story with our audience. We look forward to having you back at Unscripted at the Tribune very soon.
I can't wait. Thank you for letting me hop in with you today.
Thank you, Karis. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay with us. Good Wednesday afternoon. Good good Wednesday afternoon. Thank you for joining us here at Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Butford from the Trussell Tribune, sitting in for the former Senator Phil Williams, the King Commander of Right Side Radio. Phil's on the road today, and you're stuck with me. I'm so sorry for that, but looking forward to spending some time with you just the same. You just heard from Karis Snyder. Karis is a Christian author from the Cullman area and is the author of Anxiety Elephants for Tween Girls and Boys, and Anxiety Elephants, 31-Day Devotional for Adults. And I hope you enjoyed that. We have had her on Tribune Unscripted in Trussville, and she was a hit with our audience. A lot of families are dealing with mental health issues, anxieties, especially post-pandemic. A lot of our young people are facing things that they've simply not had to face and talk about and discuss before. I highly encourage you to take a look at Karis Snyder. That's CarisSnider.com. If you're dealing with some of these issues in your home, great Christian consulting there from Karis and great advice, and her books could be a big help to you. So take a look at that if you have a chance. Coming up on the show at the bottom of the hour, we'll take a little break in a few minutes, and when we come back from that break, we'll have Paul DeMarco. Paul is the director of the Jefferson County Republican Party. Always very insightful. He is our political writer at the Trussville Tribune and really does a great job of keeping his finger on the pulse. As you know, right now the Alabama legislature is in session, which means none of us are safe. Anything could happen. Even with the Republican supermajority, we see some very strange things coming out of Montgomery, and it kind of makes you wonder if some of our elected officials are as conservative as the people who elected them. We're going to talk with Jeff Poore and Dale Jackson about that at the 4 o'clock hour. In between, at about 3:30, we will welcome Stephanie Smith onto the show. Stephanie is the director of the Alabama Policy Institute, one of my favorite people in the world. She is actually in Montgomery testifying today regarding the school choice bill. So we're hoping that by the time we get her on the air, she can give us an update on what happens in the House Education Policy Committee meeting today regarding the Price Act, the school choice bill, full school choice bill that has been proposed for Alabama. We've already seen what the Senate Education Policy Committee did, where Senator Donnie Chastain pulled a fast one and sent the bill after the hearing to another committee, which is a classic stalling tactic in the Alabama legislature. If you have not read Phil Williams' op-ed on that, the Price Act got shafted or got punked, you need to find that. You can find it at TrussellTribune.com, and you can find it at 1819news.com. And check that out, because he told the truth, and we're seeing shenanigans in Montgomery that we're unfortunately very accustomed to these days. Doesn't seem to matter if the Democrats are in control or if the Republicans are in control. When they get to Montgomery, they forget the people that sent them there, except to give us the shaft on the reasons we sent them there. It happens all the time. Pretty full show. I'm excited to be here. Looking forward to spending the rest of the afternoon with you guys. If y'all have anything that you want to talk about, you know how to call in and get with us. And we would love to hear from you if you've got something that you want to share, or if you've got something that you would like for us to discuss. We'll be happy to hear it out and see if we can make that happen. Again, we're going to take a short break in just a few minutes. When we come back, we'll have Paul DeMarco, Jefferson County Republican Committee Chair, and Paul will catch us up on all the goings-on that he's aware of in Montgomery. Hopefully we can get some idea of where this session is going and if they're actually going to do something for the conservative voters in Alabama. You stay with us.
Hey, all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
Oh, here we go. Hello, welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Butt from Phil again today for Phil Williams. Phil's on the road. We're not going to waste any time going to our next guest. Want to get him on as soon as possible and see what information he has got to share. This is former Senator Paul DeMarco. Paul is the award-winning political writer for the Trustful Tribune. He is also the chairman of the Jefferson County Republican Party. Paul, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Scott. Former, I would say, but I'm glad to be with you and look forward to speaking with you. I was actually in Montgomery today. A lot going on in Washington, D.C., a lot going on in Montgomery.
Well, we've got you on now. We have got Stephanie Smith coming on at 3:30. I believe she is testifying before a committee today, so she's going to give us an update when she comes on. What update can you give us right now on what's going on in Montgomery during this legislative session?
Well, we're at the halfway mark, so you know there's 15 or so more legislative days left, and the legislature will be adjourned, and I know that'll make the public happy.
None of us are safe when they're in session, and that's
right.
It's so unfortunate to say with the Republican supermajority, but issues have come with those guys too.
Watch your wallets and purses.
That's right.
I think what's going to be interesting to watch, Scott, there's a lot of stories, and let me start with giving a little credit first.
Okay.
There's been some good legislation that
has
passed.
There has.
The fentanyl bill to target fentanyl trafficking passed. That needed to pass. The good time law that passed needed to get passed.
I agree.
But there's some more legislation from the criminal justice perspective. The legislation regarding gangs, that needs to pass. I've seen some Democrats have opposed that. That bill to strengthen the penalties against the gangs, that needs to pass.
And that's a bill being pushed by Attorney General Steve Marshall.
That's exactly right.
It's critical for them and Paul, you understand this because you're also an attorney. That bill is critical for them to be able to prosecute some of this escalating violence that we see going on among young people.
And it stiffens the penalties for those who are in gang activity. It also requires them to be somebody to be tried as an adult, automatic tried as an adult above age 16. And, you know, that's an issue with what happened in Dadeville. There's no question those individuals that are not of the age majority of above 16 need to be tried as adults. I saw that some of the Democratic leadership were opposed to that. And to me, I find it hard to believe that they would have opposed these individuals that were involved in, as far as I know, the worst mass shooting in Alabama.
Right.
Would oppose these individuals being tried as adults. But there's some of the Democratic leadership that are opposed to that.
Right. And ironically, some of the highest violent crime areas in the state of Alabama are in Democrat-controlled areas. So it's their own constituents whose lives are in jeopardy when they stand in the way of something like this.
Well, you've seen it around the country in San Francisco and Chicago and New York and right here in Alabama, the high crime, and it goes back to these policies of pushing no bail, pushing weakening the criminal justice system in Alabama, just like across the country. So those bills have passed. This gang bill is hopefully going to be up and get passed. But one of what to me is really interesting, Scott, is kind of a showdown that we might see in the last half of the legislative session between the governor and lawmakers regarding what are they going to do with tax relief.
Right.
Now, you and I have talked about, I wrote a column about it not long ago, that you look at some of our neighbors, Tennessee and Florida already don't have an income tax.
Right.
It looks like Mississippi and Arkansas are on their way to removing their income tax. So what's Alabama going to do? Well, it looks, you had the governor's proposal she gave in her State of the State where she said, $400 rebate per tax filer, $800 for family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she was proposing, and there wasn't pushback at first about the legislature. But now there's been talk, and it was talk when I was in the State House, of removing the grocery tax, the 4% grocery tax.
Right, which is being pushed by the lieutenant governor.
And that looks like that's got some momentum. So the question is, you can't do both of them.
Right.
I mean, at least you're not going to see both of them pass this session with the amount of money that would take to pass both of them. And I don't think the legislature is going to do that. So the question is, which of those two will pass? Is the governor's proposal going to pass, or is the proposal in the and you've got versions in the House of Representatives, and you've got versions in the Senate.
Yep.
What's going to pass? Is the governor's proposal going to pass, or is the legislature's going to pass? Usually the governor's gotten her way with most of what she's proposed the last quadrennium, the last right. 4 years. Most of what the governor has passed, proposed, she's passed. She's also got a budget with a lot of issues, a lot of money being budgeted. Will she get what she wants, or will that the House or the Senate to come up with their own version? So I think the big story, Jeff, is what's going to happen with this showdown between the State House and the Capitol?
Paul, help us understand. Governor Ivey, if we were to believe the polls, and I think we can look at the last election, one of the most popular governors in terms of approval rating in my lifetime, but she has routinely pushed legislation that goes against everything conservatism stands for, and she still maintains this popularity in a state that is full of conservative voters. How does she pull that off?
There was just a recent poll, you may have said Morning Consult, and Governor Ivey was maybe number three in the country as the most popular governor, number three or number four in the country.
Yeah.
She had like a 63% approval rating versus a 33%, which is just unheard of.
Right.
I mean, it's just
right.
unheard of. Even Tommy Tuberville and Katie Britt were at the 50% mark.
Yeah.
And you know, they're both pretty popular. So Governor Ivey, I mean, over, and she's going to end up having being the longest serving governor in state history, I think.
Yeah.
When the governor is really good at connecting with voters, being pretty folksy, and you saw her ads. The question is, does it fit with what happens with the voters? Look
right.
at what's going on in Florida. Governor DeSantis just got lawmakers to pass a bill that would provide for the death penalty for child rapists. You know, I think if you ask the average voter in Alabama, they say, why won't we do that here in Alabama?
Right.
You look at some of the legislation passed in Florida, people are saying, let's do that here in Alabama. So I think that's what we want to see here in Alabama. And, you know, the governor has, when it comes to pro-life legislation, the pro-board reform, but I do think it is interesting to see this showdown between the legislature and the governor with regarding the rebate and the grocery tax. I think if you ask the public, they'd say, we'd like to see the grocery tax go away.
Right.
As opposed to a one-time rebate.
Well, Paul, we're spending about $500 million in a business recruiting slush fund to bring businesses to the state of Alabama. But as businesses start going through the process of site selection and looking at different states and different opportunities, what does that do when they look at Alabama, where we're still charging, or we still have a state income tax when our, as you pointed out, our neighbors do not, when we're still charging full tax on groceries, when we have the lowest public education system of all 50 states in the country? What do corporations think when they see that, and they can go to Georgia, or they can go to Mississippi or Tennessee and get pretty much the same deal?
Well, there's going to be a reckoning. I mean, look, now let's just say this. Let's give the state credit. Mercedes, Hyundai, Honda, Airbus. Alabama has been very successful in recruiting a lot of these great companies. But
right.
to me, 80% of the businesses are small businesses. And we've also got to focus on what are we doing to take care of these small businesses.
Right.
The small mom and pops who drive our economy, you know, drive through downtown Trustville, through downtown Homewood. What you're seeing is these small businesses that are employing, you know, 5 to 15 people. And if you go out to the neighborhoods and you ask people where they work, that's where they work.
Right.
They're you know, I mean, obviously you've got the big employers, and we're it's great to have all of these huge employers, but I think it's a combination of both, Jeff. What are you doing when you're competing with the Tennessees and Georgias, and you look at our tax structure for some of these other states.
I think you're right. And you mentioned small business, and that is the largest employer in the state. As a small business owner myself, I can give you a perfect example of where the pressures from Washington are affecting us. I looked at the other day at our credit line for our business, which we're not currently using, and with an interest rate over 12% because it's revolving credit, we don't want to touch that right now, and we're getting no relief from our state level.
Well, let me tell, are your listeners familiar with the new interest rate bump for mortgages, the new extra fee that if you have a good credit rating, you're going to pay more to subsidize folks whose credit rating is not as good? So you're basically going to hurt folks who have paid their bills.
Right.
And you're going to turn that money around, and you're going to incentivize folks to buy maybe more house than they can ultimately afford. Didn't that get us into the housing crisis the first time?
Yeah, we've already gone through that once.
Part of that? I mean, how many times do we have to see and repeat mistakes that were made? And we're doing it on the backs of the middle class. Oh, you remember Joe Biden? Oh, I'm not going to raise taxes on the middle class. When you raise their interest rate, their mortgage fees, an extra $40 a month, you absolutely are hurting the middle class. And these are folks who are paying their bills, and because they've got a good score and a good credit rating, I've been talking to realtors right now. They are furious about it. I've been talking to folks in the financial industry, furious about this new fee coming down from the Biden administration.
It's totally illogical, Paul. I mean, as you mentioned, we've gone through this. This is what led to the housing market crash that devastated our economy. What is Joe Biden thinking by returning to those type policies?
Look, you look at, did you hear about, you know, they're sending soldiers to the border, but they're not going to be standing guard at the border. They're to help transition people into the country. It is the, I mean, so you hear about that. You see what he's doing with foreign policy. I mean, every time, you see with the debt limit credit, and every time, you can name a category in this country and see how far this administration has failed. Look at the military and the recruiting numbers. That is a direct responsibility due to the failures of this Secretary of Defense, to the Chief of Staff, and to this president that does not put national security first.
Paul, let's shift back to Montgomery. There are two different bills I want to ask you about. Let's start with the Price Act. We know what happened. Right now, we should mention that is being heard before the House Education Policy Committee right now. There's testimony going on. That also has already gone to the Senate Education Policy Committee. We saw Senator Donnie Chastain, who chairs that committee, pull a fast one. At the end of the hearing, he sends the bill to yet another committee, which is a classic stalling tactic in Montgomery. Who is controlling this?
Well, I mean, you can look at the teachers' union. You can look at folks who are opposed to legislation. You know, here's the thing: is have an up or down vote. I mean, I think that's what most people say. Just have an up or down vote, and if it loses fairly, it loses. And look, people can. When it comes to education, there are, you know, parents first and foremost, because parents want to make sure that their kids get the best education, no matter where they live in the state.
Right.
But have an up or down vote and make these state representatives and senators, they have to have a tough vote, and they need to make a decision on how they're going to vote. And their district may want them to vote, but have to vote.
Right.
And I think that's the frustration is you see in Montgomery. But bring it up and have a vote. Give everybody an opportunity to go and debate it, spend days voting, debating it, but have the vote.
I think you're right. And you know, I want to talk about the ESG bill that Dan Roberts was sponsoring that I don't know if you've heard, but that we were supposed to have testimony in committee on that. And that bill suddenly got pulled from pressure from BCA. Are you hearing anything about that?
Well, and again, the concern with in the past, look, when Republicans took over in 2010, the Republicans are there with the business community saying, look at all the issues we've had. We had to pass tort reform. We had to pass legislation to make our state more business friendly. But now you've seen some of the pushback from businesses when it came to the mandate, when it came to some of these other issues. And so you've seen a real chain relationship between the public who support Republicans and conservative policy in some of these businesses. We don't want this ESG policy.
Right.
We don't want it. And yet there's a disconnect there. And so Republicans need to say, look, we're bringing this up for a vote. We have a supermajority here. This is what the public wants. And goes back to the top of our conversations. You're seeing those votes taking place in places like Florida.
Paul,
I'm
sorry to interrupt. We're coming up on a break. Can I hold you over for we've got a little short break, then a few minutes after that. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Hold on for us. We'll be right back to talk to Paul DeMarco. Here for Phil Williams on Right Side Radio, and joining us is Paul DeMarco. He was with us in the last segment, gracious enough to stay over. Paul, we were talking about the sleight of hand we're seeing with legislation when it goes into some of these committees and either disappears forever or they use their stalling tactics by sending it to another committee. We've seen that happen on the Senate side with the Education Policy Committee on the PRICE Act, which is the school choice legislation that's proposed right now. We found out this morning that Dan Roberts had proposed a bill to keep any government agencies from investing based on ESG, which we refer to as the woke scorecard. And suddenly, Dan's bill is pulled from committee just hours before a hearing. I'm hearing Dan Roberts had nothing to do with pulling his own bill. How does that happen? Who else has the authority to pull a bill?
Chairmen of committee. So if you're the chairman of a committee, you're the king of that committee. You make all the decisions. And so here's what needs to happen, though. If your bill is basic, I'm not going to pass your bill, you need to go to the floor and say, if that's what we're going to do, then I'm going to hold things up.
I'm hearing that is about to happen. I'm hearing that's about to happen.
But you need to be serious about it and not just go up there and play a cat and say, I'm going to get a vote on my bill. And look, I had to do this to reform the Birmingham Waterworks Board 10 years ago. We had to do this. When it came to change of the form of government in Jefferson County, we had to do this. I mean, time and time again, you got to show folks you're there to come for business. And if they know they can run over you, they won't respect you, and it'll happen over and over and over again.
Well, I think you went right to the heart of it when you said the chairman is the guy in charge. We know that with the education policy move on the Price Act, that was done by Senator Donnie Chastain, who was chair of that committee, and called other committee members. I mean, that the Price Act had on that same committee had the sponsor and co-sponsor of that bill with Senator Stutz and with Senator Shelnut. They had no idea that was coming.
Yeah, and look, I was the chairman of a committee, and if we had issues, I would tell those folks in advance, say, look, your bill's either not going to pass or you got work to do. Go find some other committee member stuff, or you need to go, add some amendments, or you need to strike this portion of the language or whatever, but the way it is now. But, that's how you work with committee members if there's a bill that you've got, as you, the chairman, have issues with. So
don't blindside them.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Because look, what goes around comes around in Montgomery.
Paul,
you have
a
bill that you want, it's going to happen.
We've got 10 seconds remaining. School choice dead, or is it staying with us?
There's four more years. Remember, there's four more years. So, and this quadrennium.
Spoken like my political writer. Paul, thank you for joining us. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Absolutely, Scott. Hope your listeners are well.
Thank you, man. We'll be right back with more Right Side Radio after this break.
Listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Yeah. are listening to Right Side Radio, but you're not listening to Phil Williams today. This is Scott Buttram. I'm the publisher at the Trustful Tribune, sitting in for Phil, and I've done this a few times in the past. Boomer is on the other side of the controls, making sure I don't make a complete fool of myself and making sure you can hear me. And I don't know that I would do it without Boomer here riding shotgun to make sure everything works the right way. But I enjoy being with you guys. I enjoy the opportunity to step in for Phil from time to time. Just to tell you a little bit about me, because I didn't really introduce myself. We went right to guest when the show started at 2. We are a newspaper in Trustville, Alabama. We cover 9 cities in Jefferson and St. Clair counties. I think the best 9 cities in the area. I'm a little bit partial to those folks. We're there with them every day reporting on their news. We operate like an old-fashioned newspaper, and by that, I mean when we report stories, we report the facts, we try to bring all the sides we can together and share that with our audience, and then we let our audience decide where they stand. I've come to find that we have pretty intelligent readers, and they don't really need the newspaper to tell them how to think. They just need the newspaper to share news with them. And so we go old school, and as a result, we've had a pretty tremendous growth period when a lot of much larger newspapers are going a different direction. And we think opinions are fine. Op-eds in newspapers, they've been there since newspapers started in America. I think those are important. We welcome those. But our opinion goes on our opinion page. On the news page, our opinion has no place there. So as a result, our readers have responded well to that over the last 15 years and have given us a lot of support. If you're looking for a newspaper and not happy with the one in your community, you can join us online anytime at TrustfulTribune.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Scott Buttram. Sometimes I'll say things that make you happy. Sometimes I'll say things that make you mad, but I'm always just going to say what's on my mind and probably should worry a little bit more about how it's taken, but I don't have a lot of time for that, so I generally don't do it. So far on the show today, we have had Kara Snyder, who is a Christian author from Cullman, Alabama. Karis has written 2-3 books, Anxiety Elephants for Tween Boys and Anxiety Elephants for Tween Girls, and a 31-day devotional, Anxiety Elephants for Adults, and just teaching Christians how to cope with anxiety in today's world. I think we all know that following the pandemic, we have seen more challenges in mental health, and sometimes it's affecting our own families and our own children. And these are very important issues, and there is a way to deal with these things. There is a Christian philosophy and principle to follow, and I urge you to look into Kara Snyder's books if you're having issues with like that in your family or with yourself. Just get a great Christian perspective on how to handle all of that. We were then joined by Paul DeMarco, former Senator, State Senator Paul DeMarco. He is the chairman of the Jefferson County Republican group. He does a great job. He is also the political writer for the Trustful Tribune. He has won awards from the Alabama Press Association for political columns that he has done in the Trustful Tribune. We're very proud to have Paul as a part of our newspaper, and really enjoyed his insight in what's happening in Montgomery right now. And that's something we're going to talk about a little bit. Okay, we are a conservative state. By many measures, we are considered the most conservative state in America. And there's some pretty conservative states out there. You know that most of the country is not reflected in places like New York and Los Angeles and some of these cities, Atlanta, that have become ultra-liberal. That's really not reflective of middle America. And Alabama is more reflective of it. Yet we have a supermajority of Republicans in Montgomery. And somehow, some way, this Republican, supposedly conservative supermajority fumbles conservative issue after conservative issue after conservative issue every year when they go into session. And this is no different. We're seeing evidence right now that supposedly conservative legislators elected by conservative voters end up in Montgomery doing things and making decisions that are not reflective of the people who elected them. Two issues have come up. One is a major issue. It's sweeping the country in conservative states, and that's full school choice. That means the parent can take a designated amount of money. The PRICE Act, which is proposed right now, I believe calls for $6,900 a year. And they can take that money, put it into an education savings account, and then they choose the best education environment for their children. That should be a parent's decision. Anybody that disagrees with that, I think they're just wrong-headed. Ultimately, as parents, we are responsible for our children. We should have the ability to make the best choices in their interest, whatever that choice may be, and to send those kids and our own kids wherever we think they can get the best education that reflects our values as a family. That's not going on in Alabama. We have very limited school choice through charter schools. We have a scholarship program that is designated for the lowest 6% of schools according to standardized testing in the state of Alabama. That means 94% of the schools are completely left out. There are some doors that you can maneuver your way through if your child is not in one of the lower 6% schools, but it's very difficult to do that. And it doesn't matter because there's only enough funding in this scholarship fund for a very, very small majority of students in Alabama. So most students are trapped wherever they are zoned unless their parents are in a position to sacrifice and send them to a private school or homeschool them, take an alternate route. The full school choice bill would make that available to every child in Alabama. Again, this is passing in conservative states all around us. I believe 7 states have passed full school choice this year alone, or it's very close to passing in 7 states. In Alabama, the school choice bill went before the Education Policy Committee, and you just heard Paul DeMarco tell you that the chairman of those committees have unquestioned power. After the hearing on the PRICE Act, after the hearing on school choice, committee chairman, Republican Senator Donnie Chastain, just unilaterally sends the bill to another committee. And that is, we're halfway through the session, y'all. So sending it to another committee usually is a classic stalling tactic in Montgomery. And this is not some shenanigan that's being pulled by the Democrats. They came out from the get-go and said, no, we want our kids trapped in their public schools. We're not supporting any school choice. This sleight of hand is coming from Republicans, Republican leadership. And the question for you as a voter, how long do you let the people you elect get away with not doing the things you sent them to Montgomery to do? It's not something that we can let go on forever. We're 4 years away, almost 4 years away from another statewide election for legislators. So we've got to live with this for at least 3 more years, 3.5. As I said, they're only halfway through the session. But at what point do we start holding Republican lawmakers accountable for not reflecting what Republican and conservative voters send them to Montgomery for? It shouldn't be going on, but it is, and it's going on at a pretty rampant rate. We found out this morning that a bill presented by Senator Dan Roberts, and Senator Roberts' district reaches a little bit into Trustville. He is mostly the Mountain Brook area, reaches a little bit into Trustville. He presented a bill, a lot of you have heard about this, saying that investments by state agencies cannot be done with companies that are adhering to the ESG principles, which is the woke scorecard, to make sure that companies are aligning with ESG in terms of woke policies. And that is not reflective of Alabamians. That's not what we support. And he had a bill saying that could not be a decision. Any companies that were involved in ESG would not get investments from Alabama agencies. Well, we find out today through 1819 News that the Business Council of Alabama, these are your Alabama powers, all the big corporate people in the state of Alabama. That's their organization. They didn't like that bill. They want to invest money wherever they want to invest it. And if they have to play the ESG game, then they're more than willing to play it. But they don't want to worry about what conservatives in Alabama want, what they want. They just want to be able to put their money wherever they can, ignoring the best return for stockholders, and just playing this woke game, which is wearing thin on everybody. BCA objected, and suddenly the bill is pulled from committee. Now, we've got reason to believe that Senator Roberts had nothing to do with pulling his own bill. And according to Paul DeMarco, the one person that would have had the power to do that was the committee chair, and the fact that the Republicans have a supermajority means that committee chair is going to be a Republican. So how long, listeners, do we tolerate elected leaders elected by conservative voters who do not represent those conservative voters when they get to Montgomery? We're going to find out a little bit more about that in a little while. At the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Stephanie Smith from the Alabama Policy Institute. And Stephanie will update us. She's actually testifying at this moment before one of these committees involving the Price Act. She's in front of the House Education Policy Committee. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back for a few minutes, and then Stephanie will join us at the bottom of the hour. You stay with us. This is Right Side Radio, and I'm Scott Buttram. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram from the Trussell Tribune, sitting in for Phil Williams. Phil's on the road, taking care of some other business. Always happy to have an opportunity to step in and speak to this audience. Anybody that's on the right side is on the right side of me. I like you guys. I like what you stand for. I like what Phil stands for. So real honor to sit in. We've been talking to a couple of different people. We talked to Kara Snyder in our first segment, and Kara's you can look her up at karasnyder.com. She is a Christian author out of Cullman, Alabama, that's written a number of really great devotional books, especially dealing with anxiety and mental health with children and with adults. So take a look at her books if you get a chance. We have heard from Paul DeMarco. Paul is a former state senator. He is currently the chairman of the Republican Party of Jefferson County. Paul called us. I think he was leaving Montgomery when he called us, actually. He's been down there talking to legislators during the session, pushing for conservative agendas and conservative laws that will support the beliefs and the principles of Alabama voters, conservative Alabama voters, which is one of the largest groups in the country. So we appreciate Paul, and he gave us a lot of time, a lot of information on what he has seen going on in Montgomery. There have been some good things that the legislature has done. I pick on them a lot, but let's give them credit where credit's due. Passing the fentanyl bill, that where we've raised the penalties. If you are caught with fentanyl in the state of Alabama, you are going to pay, and pay dearly. And I completely support that. I will tell you, in the interest of full disclosure, I lost my baby brother to an opioid addiction. And he was only 3 years older than my son. So you can imagine the dynamic that we had. And it was devastating to see him go through that, something that he just couldn't control. And this stuff is infiltrating our state at a scary, scary level. That is coming across the southern border. The product is being supplied by China through Mexico and into the United States and into our homes. And it is affecting and hurting families all over this country. And that bill, I believe that bill was brought by Chris Elliott. I apologize if I'm giving the wrong person credit or not giving the right person credit, but I believe it was brought by Elliott, and it was an outstanding bill, and it did pass very quickly. We're excited to see that. Another bill that is under consideration right now, and this bill is being touted by Attorney General Steve Marshall. He is pushing hard for this. And it is a bill that will allow the state to prosecute some of these young people under gang laws, where they can use this and tie them to gang activity that they're involved in. It is being fought by the Democrats, which is mind-boggling, because where this violence, where these murders are taking place, most likely in Alabama, where these incidents are taking place, are all Democrat-controlled areas of the state. And guess who's fighting the bill to prosecute these people? I don't know how closely you guys have followed the shootings, the mass shooting in Dadeville. I imagine, like most of the states, you've kept an eye on that and you followed that story and understand that there have been either seven arrests at this point. And every one of the suspects are 20 years old or younger, ranging all the way down to 15 years old. Quite often we see this in the city of Birmingham, which has one of the highest homicide rates in the entire country. Just a few years ago, the city of Birmingham had the third highest homicide rate of cities with a population above 200,000. Third highest in the United States of America. So, and we know the mayor of Birmingham less than 6 months ago publicly stated that a lot of this is tied to gang violence and stronger laws that would allow prosecutors to use the association that ties these people together through their gangs. Stronger laws would get some of these people off the street and keep them off the street. So that is a bill that is under consideration. Again, it is being supported heavily by Attorney General Steve Marshall. And we are dealing with the Democrats standing in the way, trying to block it. They're not interested. They don't support it. And they'll go home and cry for more gun regulations, more gun laws, stiffen the penalties on people who own guns, take them away from them, while fighting against a bill that would actually affect the violence in their community and help curtail it. In the meantime, they're just going to preach their woke agenda and blame it on guns when we all know it's the people using those guns that are committing the violence. In the same respect, we've got a school choice bill that is being shafted, shifted, and jerked all over Montgomery by Republicans. That's a conservative bill being passed by conservative states across America. In Montgomery, we've got a handful of Republicans who claim to be conservative, yet continuously fight against conservative ideals and conservative principles. So we've got to be realistic about this, folks. When we elect people to go to Montgomery as conservative voters, we can't stop there. We have to hold them accountable. When we see them pulling these shenanigans, whether it's through committees or through their voting record, and they do it a lot of different ways with the school choice bill on the Senate side, they've sent it to a second committee to try to stall it out. That was done by a Republican committee chair, Senator Donnie Chastain, pulled that stunt. We had another bill that was pulled this morning from Senator Roberts that would have stopped agencies in Alabama from investing where ESG funds are concerned. Another conservative vote. Hey, you stay with us. We are going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we will be joined by Stephanie Smith from the Alabama Policy Institute. Stephanie is in Montgomery, and she will update us on what she knows as she's leaving Montgomery. Stay with us. Right, you're back with Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram, sitting in for Phil Williams. Hey, let's get right to our next guest. One of my favorite people in the world is joining us now, Stephanie Smith from the Alabama Policy Institute. Stephanie, how are you?
I'm doing really well. I hope I sound okay because I am literally driving down the road. Burning up 65 right now.
You sound great, and that won't last long because you'll hit the parking lot any minute now. That is I-65. So,
oh my goodness!
You know it's coming.
I've just left the state house, so this is breaking news right here.
Well, that's what we want. You testified today, did you not?
I did just about 30 minutes ago. The Education Policy Committee in the House held a public hearing for the PRICE Act, which is the school choice piece of legislation that you and I have been talking about for a while.
Yeah, and we've been talking about it all afternoon. We've been talking about afternoon to our audience.
I've been sitting in that committee hearing, so I haven't gotten to listen.
Well, we've promised them that you were there, and we've already talked to Paul DeMarco as he left Montgomery, so we were anxious to hear what you had to say. and we've talked about the shenanigans pulled with the Senate Education Policy Committee.
Right.
So
that's
we
right.
were
I
very
to Larry
anxious
Dutch about that this morning.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So we had the committee meeting this afternoon at 1:30, and
right.
there were two bills ahead of the public hearing. One that had not had a public hearing called, but had a lot of discussion, and it was actually, you'd be interested in it, it was actually about alternative teacher certification.
Uh-huh.
And that was an interesting bill. And then also Terry Collins is carrying a bill about the expansion of charter schools. And so those two bills were ahead of the PRICE Act on the list. And then we had a public hearing on the PRICE Act and just got finished. So, but the committee had ran out of time, gave no questions or comments to the public hearing information, and will be the bill will be back up on the calendar next Wednesday for discussion and, Lord willing, a vote.
So it's been stalled for at least a week.
At least another week, yes,
okay.
In the House.
Okay.
Now, the Senate, when the situation that happened last week was a surprise to the sponsor, an unwelcome surprise.
Right.
To Larry Stutz, as you know, and that's being worked on and worked out. Unfortunately, it looks like the PRICE Act is treading water, in all directions.
I gotcha. I gotcha. And I will say on the Senate Education Policy Committee, you not only had the bill sponsor in Senator Stutz, you had the bill co-sponsor in Senator Shelnut, both sitting on that
right.
committee, both blindsided by the move of the chairman.
Right.
When he sent that bill to another committee. And
think that the real frustration there, too, was that he asked for it to be in the other committee,
right.
was told, no, we're going to run it through policy.
Right.
And then it still got, he still, kind of got yanked around.
Yeah,
so
it looks suspicious.
That was even more frustrating.
It looks suspiciously like a setup, Stephanie. I don't see how we can take it any other way.
Right.
One of the things that I just asked Paul DeMarco, and I don't know if you're mm-hmm. aware of this, but we're hearing that the investment bill regarding ESG funds
yes.
and policies and principles that was sponsored by Dan Roberts was supposed
right.
to be in a hearing today. And at the last minute, the bill was pulled. And so I asked Paul DeMarco, who is a former state senator? I said, other than the bill sponsor, because I'm being told that Senator Roberts had nothing to do with pulling his own bill. And
that
I said, who else has that authority? And he said, the committee chair. The committee chair
mm-hmm.
can do it.
Right.
Stephanie, we're seeing this too often, and we're seeing it in every session, every year, where voters mm-hmm. are sending what they believe to be conservative representatives. The voters have built a supermajority of conservatism in Montgomery, yet these elected leaders, not all of them, but a fair number of them, are shafting, shifting, and undercutting conservative issues session after session after session. What do we
yeah,
do?
Yeah, and it's interesting, having been, up and down the state house hall, kind of, I've been a staffer, I've been a corporate lobbyist, I've been, a random mom from Birmingham that's interested, and now had my own business and then now running API. I've got about 20-25 years of experience in those hallways, and I will tell you this, that there is really a sentiment there right now that I've never experienced before
right.
in those 20 or 25 years, which is it's a very top-down, very controlled I would say maybe even use the term sequestered.
Right.
That there are powers that be that are deciding what is allowed to be discussed, what is allowed to be asked, and what is allowed to be debated. And the frustrating thing about that is that, you know, every senator down there was voted on by the same number of people, whether or not they serve in leadership or not.
Right.
And every House member is the same way. And so frustrating thing, process-wise, is this idea that you really just don't know what the process is going to be.
Right.
And as you indicated, it keeps shifting depending on the subject matter. It's just that the subject matter tends to be the things that the leadership might have some questions on, or the, on the other side of that equation, just don't want to debate.
Right.
And so, you know, run-of-the-mill voters and run-of-the-mill House members and senators are getting run over. And it's a frustrating thing to watch. You know, we all grew up on the Schoolhouse Rock, and the Schoolhouse Rock is not rocking right now. On Goat Hill, it's a little, it's convoluted. It's hard to tell. It's hard to manage, just to be honest, to know exactly where something's going to crop up or if something's going to get pulled. I did have the opportunity to talk to some senators about that ESG bill this morning. I went down early for some budget hearings, and I spoke to a few folks about that bill because API, you know, supports clamping down on that situation and paying attention to the fiduciary responsibility, especially of financial institutions, as it regards to ESG, but also other businesses and protecting our homegrown businesses and timber and our homegrown businesses in the state of Alabama. And so I talked to a few folks this morning. Yes, that was a surprise. There was a lot of discussion, I believe, in caucus about that, but then it was a surprise that got pulled, and the discussion was basically, you know, the rug was pulled out from under Dan Roberts on that. That is unfortunate.
Yeah.
And also really frustrating.
Very frustrating. You mentioned the atmosphere and the feeling in the halls of the State House. I was 50 years old before our legislature was not controlled by the Democrats. And as the session or two leading into the Republican takeover, this same dynamic that you're talking about existed inside the Democrat Party. They were splintering. They were going into separate camps, and then there was that group in leadership that almost locked out other legislators. They were going to control everything. They were in love with the power. They were in love with the institution of power, but they were not representing the people who elected them. In that case, we saw the Republicans sweep in and take the majority. I don't see the Democrats sweeping back in and taking majority, but I do see a similar splitting within the Republican Party, where some are there trying to represent the conservative principles that they ran on, and others are just in love with the power and in love with the fact that BCA calls them to do their bidding. I don't know how we break this cycle, but for the good of the people of Alabama, we've got to figure out a way to break it.
Yeah, it's interesting being at API and having kind of a network connection of other think tanks and other family policy council groups in other states.
Yeah.
This is something that a lot of red states are experiencing right now, and it's caused the rise of the, you know, state network of freedom caucuses. And that's one of the things that I know, you know, has, you know, some people have been in discussion about in Alabama, and it may take that or something similar to that in order, you know, to shake things up. The frustrating thing for me specifically, just honestly, is you know, we've got, 72-73% of Alabama voters vote straight party Republican, and they think that they've done their job by doing that. And for the most part, voters have done their job by doing that, you know, or so they believe.
Right.
But I actually would argue for a little bit more balance. I would argue that with a little bit more balance legislatively and just discussion-wise, between Democrats and Republicans, we end up with a better product than when we have a supermajority that is basically ignoring their base.
Well, that's a very valid point, and that's what I believe we will see if the Republican Party continues to splinter and take separate sides on key issues. One side or the other is going to start trying to figure out a way to go after Democrat legislators and pull them to their side.
Right, that's right. And it's been interesting this session, too, with the occupational tax cut and the grocery tax cut and some other things, you know, subject matter-wise, but especially financially, it's been surprising and honestly pleasantly surprising to me to be able to work hand in hand with Democrats, especially in the House, on those financial issues, because in a couple of cases, they're actually leading the charge. Anthony Daniels absolutely led the charge on cutting the tax for overtime. Well, and it's great to be able to work together with Democrats, but it also kind of just creates a strange dynamic when you have Democrats wanting to cut taxes and Republicans wanting to hold on to
that. Stalling on it when that is supposed to be a conservative principle from the get-go. It's mind-boggling. I actually think there may be an opportunity on school choice. But one of the things I think, Stephanie, and you and I have talked about this, I know you are a huge proponent of school choice. It would help some of the Democrat-controlled areas of the state as much or more than any other area of the state. So it's boggling my mind that we can't get some Democrats to cross over, and I think we probably can. But we've also that conversation has got to change a little bit. This is not just about getting kids out of underperforming schools. This is about the indoctrination that we know is taking place in public schools, in some very nice neighborhoods and in some very tough neighborhoods across the state. It's not just about the lack of academic performance, but it's also about what our kids are being taught in school. And there are quite understandably a lot of parents that do not want their children subjected to that.
That's right, especially in the younger years. I hear a lot from elementary school aged parents who are just absolutely floored about some of the things that their children are coming home with and just kind of the perspective that their kids are coming home with as far as gender fluidity and some race issues and just things that honestly they weren't equipped or expecting to have that level of conversation with, you know, kindergarten, first, second graders.
Right.
You know, the legislature attempted to address that. The State Board of Education, has attempted to address some of those things. But the truth is, It's just still happening, and that's created a new constituency of parents, of frustrated parents who really just want the opt-out, and they want to be able to use a small portion of the money that they send, you know, through their taxes, through their income taxes, and they want to be able to use a portion of that money to do something else. There's also, you know, a need for special needs kids and even kids who are being bullied or just in a really difficult social setting or social situation to kind of press the pause button or just take a break and take a mental health break from the public school system that they're zoned for. And there's a lot of value to that when you look at it from an individual standpoint instead of a system standpoint, that parents would have the agency to make that decision of what's best for their child, regardless of the why. It could be academic. It could be social. It could be the indoctrination. It could be worldview. It could be any of those things. But the whole point of school choice is to put that agency back into the hands of the parents who know the children the best, instead of demanding that they acquiesce to the system.
Right. And ironically, one of the best examples of that is probably the Acceptance Academy in Birmingham.
Absolutely.
You know, they really work with kids who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, things of that nature that are struggling and having a hard time in a traditional public school. Not a school that I would choose for my child, but you know what? If a kid feels safer there, is performing academically, and it's a better environment, I fault no parent that wants their child to be in that environment.
Yeah, no, I don't either. It's one of those things. We were on a panel together, and I've said this phrase now several times since then, which is, you know, when asked about that, freedom is hard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, freedom is hard. You might choose something different from your family than I would choose for my family, but that's what America is all about.
That's right.
Which is allowing us to make our own decisions, not forcing kids into bad situations, not tying parents' hands
Stephanie,
so that they can't make the right decisions for their kids.
Stephanie, we're headed into a break. Can I get you to hold over for a little short segment after the break?
I'd be happy to.
Thank you so much. Hang on. This is Right Side Radio. We'll be right back with Stephanie Smith from API. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram, sitting in for Phil Williams. We've only got a short time, so before I turn it back over to Stephanie Smith from the Alabama Policy Institute, Stephanie, I've already made up my mind. The next time Phil asks me to do this, you're coming with me and you're co-hosting the entire show.
Oh, that'd be really fun. Let's do that.
The two of us are going to pull that together. Okay, we've only got about a minute.
Boomer might be scared.
He's with Phil every day. I don't think anything scares him anymore. we've got about a minute. So I want to just allow you that minute to kind of wrap up your thoughts on where we are at this moment in the session and how you think this is going to end.
Yeah, we're on the tail end of the session, and I'll give credit where credit is due. There have been some good discussion. The Protecting Women in Sports bill is going to be on the floor of the Senate today and has been well received, and that's a win. And Susan Dubose has done a fantastic job with that. Some of these tax cut discussions have been very healthy. We've been trying to get a grocery tax cut for 25 years.
Yep.
Is it what I would have written? Absolutely not. Is it better than nothing? Absolutely.
Yep.
So we're making some progress. What we are not making progress on is an understanding, a fundamental understanding that taxpayer dollars are taxpayer dollars.
Right.
And that when there's a surplus, it needs to come back to the taxpayers.
There you go. There you go. And we're talking about the very foundation of conservative principles when we're talking about those things. Stephanie, we really appreciate the job you're doing at Alabama Policy Institute. I was telling Boomer during the last break, I only thought I was a conservative until I met you. And
somebody called me an ideologue today, and I think they meant it as an insult, but I smiled.
That's the wrong insult for you. You'll wear that like a badge of honor. But hey, Stephanie, let me say this. I'm glad you're on our side because you're one of the smartest people I've ever been around. You understand policy and you know how to get things done, and you are going to be just a wonderful asset for the Alabama Policy Institute. You already are, and you're going to become a more valuable asset with every passing day. Hey, thank you for joining us. I'm serious. Next time I'm asked to do this show, I'm calling you and dragging you up here with me.
That would be really fun. Let's definitely do that.
Thanks, Stephanie. We'll be right back after this break with the Grand Council. Dale Jackson and Jeff Poor will join me at 4 o'clock. Stay with us. Come on back.
Listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm not Phil Williams, as you may have guessed. I'm Scott Buttram, sitting in for Phil. And it is now that time of the week that I know all of the listeners listen forward to. It's time for Grand Council.
Assemble the Grand Council.
Is the Grand Council present and accounted for?
Yes, sir. Dale Jackson present. What?
Dale Jackson checking in. Who else we got?
And Jeff Poore checking in.
Jeff Poore. All right, now two of my favorite conservative commentators here, also occasionally my sparring partners. Guys, are y'all ready to get this thing going? I'm the rookie here. So, hey, Dale, why don't you get us started with the first question?
Sure. I think we're seeing the Space Command situation is getting worse and worse.
Yep.
Tommy Tuberville continues to pound away on anybody he gets in front of him to say, hey, where's this decision? Where's this decision? I think it's pretty clear that it's not coming to Alabama. It's going to be ugly. And I think our political elite and our betters are going to blame Tommy Tuberville for being so adamant about this. Am I wrong?
Ooh. Jeff?
I don't think so. The political elite are beholden to Tommy Tuberville. They're not going to pick a fight with him, especially the farmers. I mean, he is the alpha. Yes, by the way, my two-year-old is screaming at me. We're driving through Birmingham. To go see Tucker tomorrow, but anyway, I just don't think that they're going to do that to Tuberville. Here's what I think they'll do, Dale. I can see them trying to stall this decision until Biden's out of office and hope that he loses in next year in 2024, and then just give it to Alabama.
Interesting take. I'm just having trouble getting over the irony that Biden, I shouldn't have any trouble getting over it. We see it all the time. But the irony that Biden is blaming all of the decisions on politics, he is doing exactly what liberals accused Donald Trump of doing with the site selection. We all know at this point, we've seen the reports. Huntsville was simply the best choice by the criteria put forth by this committee. We saw it in every judging or every factor that they judged. And yet Trump was accused of playing politics and giving it to Alabama because Alabama voted for Trump. And literally, that is what Biden is doing right now. Now, to Dale's question, will the political elites blame Tommy Tuberville? It's entirely possible. I could see that happening. They will try to blame somebody, but I think Jeff might have the ticket on this. I could see this. The best thing for Alabama would probably be to try to stall it out until Biden's out of office. But who they will blame? They'll scapegoat somebody. They always do. Dale, let's go back to you. What are your thoughts?
Oh, okay. I think they will blame him. Mo Brooks isn't there to kick around anymore. So now it becomes who's the next most outspoken person. It's Tommy Tuberville. He's gotten in fights over abortion. He's getting in fights over this. He's gotten in fights over immigration. He's buddied up with Joe Manchin. All these things. And that Joe Manchin thing's probably a good thing. They'll see that as a good one. He's working with a Democrat. But Tuberville is much louder than anyone else in the delegation. And this has been one of his issues. I think he's right. For doing everything he's doing. I just think that they'll look for a scapegoat. And I don't think they really like Tommy Tuberville. Jeff's right. He's their guy, I guess, the farmers and stuff like that. But I think the newspapers and some of our other elites aren't too happy that we have a football coach as our senator, and they will say that his failure to be diplomatic might have led to
his lack of leadership. So, Dale, I've got a follow-up to that, and I think you may have just answered it, at least in part, when you mentioned the newspapers. Specifically, what elites do you see that would go after?
Oh, I'm talking about the media. I mean, I use elites disparagingly. I don't mean they're actually elites. Come on, you're a newspaper guy. They don't make any money. They don't have any power. No, what's going on?
It's the lowest level of elitism possible. Right. Jeff, let's go to you. What's your question?
Well, I'm going to open this can of worms. Dale and I got into it a little this morning on his radio show, so I'm eager to hear what you think, Scott, but this idea that we're going to ban minors at anything drag related, I think it's a bit of an overreach from the nanny state government. It's like a Republican supermajority is trying to play the role of nanny state. What do you think of that? What do you think about this effort from the state senate? There's a handful of senators. Two things I think are good. They want to ban drag shows at public libraries. In the public schools, that they want to ban minors from any other drag shows. Is that an overreach?
Can I go first, Dale? You okay with that?
Sure, your show, man.
The first thing I would say is, you know, we're kind of notorious in Alabama for solving problems that don't exist. We've kind of done that for 150 years now as a state. I think this probably falls into that category. I don't know that we've got a real problem with kids going to drag shows in Alabama. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Lord knows, all three of us cover enough news to know anything is possible and anything could happen at any minute. I would have more of a comfort level if they were simply treating them in their relationship to children, if they were treating them the same way they would Sammy's strip club, you know, anywhere that kids aren't allowed now. If it's a sexualized show, kids shouldn't be allowed then. At the same time, I don't want to be a nanny state. I don't want to sit here and preach freedom and then try to deny people freedom just because they don't agree with me or because they see things a different way. Dale?
They started the fight. They can lose the fight. That's my take on it. I mean, that's just the way it is. Look, I didn't ask them to start roping in kids and reading to them and doing all this other stuff. That's going to get a reaction. The laws were not set perfect in 1932, 1885, or 1779. We are allowed to change, tweak, and correct things that need to. And as they come up, this has come up. They pick the fight. They can lose the fight.
Jeff, valid point. They did start this crap.
Well, I started it, but I don't really care about that. I just don't tell me how to raise my kid, okay? I don't take your kid to a drag show, number one. That's my advice. But I don't need the idiots in the Alabama legislature telling me how to raise my kid. You know, I mean, I do a bad enough job, I guess. I don't need them doing that.
I'm honestly thinking that may be a strong point right there. I don't really want anybody in Montgomery telling me how to live my life or raise my kid. I don't know, guys. I think that I lean toward staying out of it a little bit unless we really see a problem. But I also agree with Dale. They started this crap. We're going to give it back to them. All right, here's the question I've got for you two, and this will take us into our first break probably. Does the Price Act get a vote on the floor of the House or the Senate in this session? Jeff?
I think I can see it in the Senate, can't see it in the House. I think this could get through a Wars Committee where it got punted to by Donnie Chastain, and I can see the Price Act get through the Senate. But it'll get voted on with the assumption that it's DOA in the House, and it'll probably pass, and then that's where it'll die.
Okay. Dale, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it will get a vote. I mean, the real story is, you know, the AEA flexing their muscle yet again. They've donated a bunch of money to Republicans. And in the House, it's been effective at spiking this. And that's a real problem. There were polls yesterday out that said African-Americans, 78% support school vouchers and things like the
wow.
Price Act.
That's awesome.
And even in Illinois, like 79% of people there support it. So liberal states support it. Alabamians support it. But the teachers union doesn't support it. So Alabama Republicans are going to lay down for them.
Very interesting. I am also hearing from legislators that they are getting more pressure from superintendents than
yes.
they are AEA. And they're getting a lot of pressure from AEA.
But you know what? I hear that. That's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, same justification, for sure. Exact same thing with the exact same constituency. And yeah, same thing.
Okay. Guys, I'll answer that question very quickly. I think that the House does have a shot at getting it to a vote simply because the numbers are a little better there. Still got a task to go through the second committee and get there. I think there are too many people on the House side to get it to the floor for a vote, but I think the Senate might. Guys, we're going to take our first break. If you'll stay with us, we'll come back. I'm going to go ahead and warn you both. We may be looking at an extended session of the Grand Council today. So get yourselves comfortable. We'll be back after this break. We'll be right back. discussion. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram, sitting in today for Phil Williams. We are in the middle of Grand Council. I'm joined by Dell Jackson and Jeff Poor, the two regular members of the Grand Council. Guys, let's get another round started. Dell, let's start with you.
All right. The monument at IS-65, that Saturn rocket out there, is something that a lot of people want to save, whether it is restore that one, replace it, whatever. There was a bill put forth by Tom Butler to do just that. A bunch of Democrats and Republicans signed on board, I think 27 of 35. And now a lot of people are boo-hooing and complaining and saying, wait, hold on. This is changing. This is changing the monuments law. And now it's going to make it harder to tear down historical markers and whatnot. Uh-oh. And now there's a little bit of drama there. Will this get changed before the final vote on this and they'll save the rocket but not change the memorial law? Or was it a Trojan horse, which they can't tear down either?
Jeff, you want to go first on this?
Yeah, you know, that secret racist Tom Butler trying to sneak one past the goal line here. I mean, come on, is who's really saying that? Is this like an AL.com thing?
Yes, that's exactly right.
That's what it is.
Well, go back to New Jersey, wherever you're from, whoever's saying that. it's so stupid. Whatever it takes to get the rocket done and for this to go away, I'm for. So change the law, whatever you need to do.
Jeff, does that mean you're in favor of keeping the rocket, replacing the rocket, repairing the rocket, whatever it takes to have the rocket?
Whatever it takes, as long as Dale quits asking this question every week.
Jeff wants to put a drag show there instead for the people to see it, so he can take his kid there when he's driving in.
Jeff would never take his kid to the drag show. I'm going to defend Jeff. He would never take his kid to the drag show. He just doesn't want to deny other people the right to take their kids if they want to. I think the rocket is important to the state of Alabama. I think it is one of those road sign symbols that shows us that we're not necessarily the state that people like to stereotype us as. I'm for whatever it takes to preserve, either repair or replace the rocket. And you know, at this point, I would like to go off on, I can't remember his first name, Centel, whoever's over Alabama Tourism. Yeah, who, you know, gets rave reviews, and I, to this day, do not understand it. Tourism in Alabama has grown in spite of him, not because of him, and he is one of the people that is least representative of the voters of this state, which is why he doesn't care about the rocket.
I guess. Maybe that is the case, but I'll tell you this. People care very much, and I think even if they do have to sneak that in, and it becomes something where it makes it harder to tear down other monuments, I think that'll pass too. But I'm guessing they'll change it.
Yeah, I hope the rocket remains, and that's what I'm pushing for. Let's say, Jeff, it's your turn. What's your question?
Anybody else think it's a horrible idea for the state to lease a new state house from the RSA besides me?
I think it's an awful idea. I think it's an awful idea. Look, I think Jeff said it best this morning. I'll agree with one thing Jeff said this morning. He did say that going out and leasing this makes no sense. It's a function of government. So, yeah, spend the money, buy the land, build the damn thing, and run it. And I think people will be fine with that. But renting it from RSA, so once again, they can hook up their buddies, that's a bad idea.
I think it was Jeff, is it my turn? You okay with
it? You're the host.
It is. You're up.
I'm jumping. I want to jump in here. I think it was Paul DeMarco that tweeted this morning, is there another state that does not own their own state house? I don't know the circumstances in every state. I do not understand this obsession with our legislature wanting to lease everything and own nothing. Remember, they tried to do this with the prisons. They tried their best to just, you know, do a lease deal and let somebody else own it and run it while the federal courts are pointing both barrels of a double barrel shotgun at us. And here we go again, giving RSA control and money, and it makes no sense. You've actually got a pretty sizable faction of the state that would love to see the director of RSA step down and go away. But we seem to have a legislature that is bound and determined to strengthen his hand at every move. This makes no sense whatsoever to me. As I think as Jeff just said, or Dale said, this is a state function. This is a state property. This should be a state building, and we should not be going through RSA to do it. It's funny, they always find the money to do whatever they want, and then they love to, well, it's, you know, a better financial deal, we don't have the budget, yada, yada, yada. We end up with the state, the citizens end up with zero assets out of this building that we will pay tens of millions of dollars for.
Let me just add this, Scott. They've increased the price of that Elmore County prison from $636 million, almost $1 billion,
right,
in just a vote of a unelected committee. And you're telling me you can't spring for a state house, but you could just, by the snap of a finger, like, increase the price of the Elmore County prison? It just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Alternate idea here, guys. Why don't we combine the two, put the prison and the state house together so they can just serve their time in both places?
Oh, he went there. He actually went there, and I don't disagree. I think that was probably a pretty good suggestion. But I would rather see the state own the assets than the state not own the assets. Guys, we're coming up on a break. Can you guys hold over for me for another segment? I texted both of you. Nobody responded, so either you're not reading your text or that was a very polite no.
As long as it's quick.
No, I guess if Jeff will stay, I'll stay. Okay.
Thank you, guys. We'll be right back. Y'all stay with me. Well, we've got Boomer's telling me we got a couple of more minutes. So I'm going to give you my question now and let you be thinking about how you want to answer it. I want to know who pulled the ESG bill today. We'll be right back after this break. You guys stay with us. More Grand Council from Right Side Radio. This is Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram, sitting in for Phil Williams. We are in the middle of Grand Council. First of all, let me thank Dale Jackson and Jeff Poore for agreeing to stay on for one more segment so we could go to another question and cover a little more ground here. I gave them the question before we went to break, who pulled the ESG bill from committee, and I'm asking them to name names. Jeff, who did it?
Well, I think it's Dan Roberts, but he's a good guy here. Now, he says this will be back next week. He thinks the committee and go to the floor, but he is trying to be strategic here, and he has his reasons. I take him at his word. He pulled it, but I just, like I said, be careful before coming after him. But dude, he's got a lot of people coming for him.
I'm hearing he didn't pull it, Jeff. I might not be getting great information, but that's what I'm being told, that he didn't pull it.
Well, I mean, they insist more than just one that this is going to come back next week. You know, there's enough, and you look at who's co-sponsoring that bill. I mean, you have some heavy hitters on that bill.
You do.
This isn't going to go away quietly.
No. Dale?
Well, from what I've read, it's three letters, BCA. They're not too happy about it.
No.
But, I mean, that's not a person, but is more of an entity. They're powerful. They're just like the other, the second powerful, maybe first powerful now, next to the AEA. So, yeah, if they decide if they want to be able to invest in companies that require ESG and all this other nonsense, I guess the BCA doesn't want to step in there and create an unfriendly business environment. And, you know, if Jeff wants to take his kids to drag queens and businesses in Alabama want to invest in woke companies, so be it. Who am I to step in the way of freedom?
Dale wants an authoritarian Alabama where big government just solves all our problems. We send our kids to school year-round and turn them into little robots so Dale doesn't have to hire a babysitter this summer.
They're all going to be AI anyway.
Okay, I had Paul DeMarco on earlier, and I asked Paul, other than the bill sponsor, who has the authority or the ability to pull a bill out of committee? And without hesitation, he said, the chairman.
Yeah.
So I'm being told that Dan didn't pull it. I don't know. And listen, I agree with Jeff on this. Dan Roberts is one of the most conservative, consistent legislators that we have in Montgomery. His district actually reaches into Trustful a little bit, so we kind of keep an eye on what he's doing. That's a guy I'm pretty proud of and pretty proud of the way he's handled things. So I don't know who the committee chair is there. If I did, I would call the name, but I hadn't looked it up, and I don't know who it is. And if Dan's pulling it because he's got a reason, I think Dan has earned the trust of conservatives. If BCA has gotten a chairman to pull it, which I think is exactly what happened with the Price Act in the Senate education policy meeting, I think that was a Donnie Chastain deal in and of itself. I don't think he had any co-conspirators. I think he just is a flunky and a puppy.
What do you mean? They're just putting it to another committee that makes more sense. That's all.
The committee that Stutz requested to begin with, and they said, oh, no, you don't need to go to that committee. That would mess up our stall tactic that we've got planned. But I don't know who's pulling the strings. I don't know who the puppeteer is, but I'm ready to start pulling the curtain back on these people, guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit much here. Again, we have a conservative legislature that can't do anything conservative.
Right.
And you know, a lot of people are getting a little frustrated with it. I think maybe some of the stuff is overwrought. But, look, I mean, we've talked about all the stuff about school choice before 1,000 times. There's the Parental Rights Act. There's all these other things, the ESG stuff. There are bills that conservative culture warriors are ready to fight on. I mean, there's a culture war going on.
Right.
Okay. And Alabama has the troops on the battlefield, and they're all just standing around going, what should we do? Should we do nothing? Okay, fine. And that, I think, is going to irritate your base.
Jeff, why do we have a supposedly conservative legislature, a strong conservative majority among voters in Alabama, and why do they keep bungling one conservative issue after another? Do they love the power more than they love the people?
We don't. I mean, people will say that we don't really have a conservative legislature. I think they think of themselves as conservative, and they probably are. What we have is this sort of oligarchy that runs the leadership in these mm-hmm. two chambers, and they're the ones calling the shots. And what's incredible, I mean, you can say what you want about Nathaniel Ledbetter and Greg Reed and not being conservative enough. Well, they're racking up some points here. They got some vote totals in their two chambers that the North Korean government would be proud of. I mean, you know, 100-5 and 35-0. They got the guys marching in lockstep, even the Democrats. So I think it's leadership, and I think there's like two or three people pulling the string. And they got the word out on the street, if you cross us, we're going to make your life a living hell for the next 3.5 years as a member of the legislature. You don't want to be the next Andrew Sorrell or whoever. So there is a chilling effect here underway.
Yeah, you don't want to be on the wrong side of the whiteboard in Governor Ivey's office, right? You don't want your name in the wrong column.
You're not going to get your overpass or your state park money or your veterans money or whatever. We're going to kill your bill the minute after you file it. People, they know this. And there's a lot of new members that are just terrified to speak out.
Where does it end, Dale? I mean, how and where does this end?
When there are consequences. And as of now, there's not really been any. Oh. I mean, can you think of contested primaries where you lose anybody? That is not being punished by leadership. I can't in the recent past.
Mm-mm. And we talked earlier on the show. Go ahead, Jeff.
What, you had 20%? You had 20% turnout in some of these Republican primaries.
Right.
You had Tom Watley's race in Auburn. he loses the contested primary by one vote. I mean, you have a very apathetic, complacent electorate that, and it affords the opportunity for the state's ruling elite to get away with what they get away with because people just don't care.
Governor Ivey comes in and pushes through, by hook or by crook, one of the largest tax hikes in Alabama history, and she walks away with one of the highest approval ratings of any governor in our lifetime. Was Mo Brooks right when he said the voters need to quit being stupid in Alabama?
I mean, he's everywhere, not just Alabama, pretty much everywhere. But yeah, there's some truth to that. There is some. There aren't really consequences for not doing. I mean, you talk the right talk during the election, and you make it through your primary. The other side wants to do something dumb, so you're going to get elected. And then if you don't act on it, well, sorry, you've got the money to run your next election. You're good to go.
Yep, that's it. Jeff, we're not.
The voters of Alabama, real quick, the voters of Alabama are like an abused spouse. I mean, they Bentley, million-dollar Bob Riley, Singleman. You look at the governors we've had, and Riley's probably the more decent one, but the bar is so low that's why Ivy has all this political capital. Now, what she does with it remains to be seen, but she's got a long leash because we've had a bad run of governors the last 30 years.
We have, and I'll tell you, I'm not happy with the voters. I think they've got to quit treating state elections like the homecoming queen election or the SGA president election, where it's just a popularity contest. Stephanie Smith made the point earlier. We have too many voters that think they have done their job when they go to the polls and they vote conservative. Then they sit back and pay no attention to what these people that they voted for actually do when they get to Montgomery. We're not going to have another 2010 where the Democrats sweep in and take control. We know that. The numbers aren't there. That's never going to happen in this state in our lifetime. But I think we're headed to a civil war within the Republican Party in Alabama. Anybody thoughts on that?
Yeah, but one side has all the guns. I mean, there's just it's just pretty clear that there is – I mean, even the establishment's conservative, but maybe they don't vote that way, but they're still going to have. And when I say guns, I mean money.
You're talking about the AEAs and the BCAs that are dumping money and controlling these people. Yeah.
Well, real quick, before we have to go here, and Bill Brooks is out there listening, and probably is. I bet you're on the Alabama Republican Party Executive Committee. It's time for these guys to put some teeth into this prohibition against AA given to Republicans.
Amen.
And stop this nonsense.
Amen.
And you get these older members that were there when Paul Harbert was the shadow governor to remind them how terrible it was when the AA ran this state. That's, you've got to get the Republican Party to start enforcing that rule and put some enforcement mechanism in that rule and knock some of this nonsense off. And I think that will start solving the problem.
Guys, we're going to leave it right there. First of all, thank both of you for coming on, two of the best in the business in conservative talk radio. I appreciate you coming in and helping me get across the finish line here because I don't do this every day. Thank you both. We appreciate you, the Grand Council. We're going to take a quick break here, folks. We will be back with more Right Side Radio. You stay with us. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. That was me daydreaming while Boomer was trying to get my attention. This is Scott Buttram sitting in for Phil Williams, and we are in the final countdown. In fact, Boomer's been playing a lot of Boston instrumentals in the background. He should have come with Final Countdown right there. That was, we just missed an opportunity there, Boomer, for some Boomer music for my Boomer self. I always enjoy that. So let's, as we go into the final 8 minutes of the show, first of all, I want to thank Phil for letting me sit in. I really enjoy doing this and love to do it at every opportunity. I want to thank you, the audience, for tolerating somebody that doesn't really know what they're doing but loves to talk about conservative issues. I think it is important for families in our state. I think conservative issues are really the best growth issues for our society that take us in the best path. I mean, this is not something that is a shtick for me. It's something that I really believe in and spent a lifetime reaching this point. I appreciate the opportunity to spend the afternoon talking to an audience that shares that view. And I enjoy hearing from people that don't share that view. I don't mind if you don't agree with my position or if you don't agree with conservatism. I'm happy to have that conversation, and I try to never back away from a conversation like that. One or two things are going to happen when I talk to people that I don't necessarily agree with on an ideological basis, and that is I'm going to learn something that I didn't know, or I'm going to strengthen my position in opposition to those things. So that's the only two things that can come from a conversation, and that's why I'm willing to have them. I urge you to do the same. If you believe in what you believe in, don't be afraid to talk about it. Don't be afraid to talk about it with people who don't share that opinion, because there are still people in the world that will listen to logic, will listen to reason, and will come around sometimes. You know, so everybody is not backed so far into their corner that they can never come out. I know it feels that way sometimes, and I know it looks that way when you look at Montgomery and when you look at Washington, that people are just immovable objects, and a lot are. But there are still a lot of people in the middle that are figuring out what is best for them, for their family, and for their country and their state. So I urge conservatives to go out and have those conversations. Don't back away from them, and don't be scared of them. A couple of things that I hope you will continue to watch as this legislative session is now on the backside. It's on the backstretch. We are through the halfway mark. Just started the second half of this legislative session. There have been some good things done, as several of our guests have pointed out. The fentanyl bill, strengthening the penalties on that, that is killing families in Alabama. It is killing our young people. The opioid epidemic is real. At this point, if it hasn't affected your family, I would almost bet my bottom dollar that it has affected a family that you love, that you care about, that you're close to. It is hitting so often and so hard that it's hard to find anyone today who has not been affected by the tragedies that are associated with the opioid epidemic. So passing the bill to hammer people in possession of and trying to sell fentanyl, that was a powerful bill. Give the legislature credit for that. That was something that needed to pass. We also need to pass the bill strengthening laws against gang activity that will allow Attorney General Steve Marshall to go after some of these people, not just the ones who sometimes commit the crime, but the people who put them up to it, the people who are involved in it, and to bring them down and start shutting this down and making some of our inner city streets a little safer again. I mean, we live in Trustville. We're right outside Birmingham. Our city limits go right up to Birmingham, and it has reached a point where there are parts of that city that I won't let my family drive through. I won't let them go into certain times of the day and after dark. And we still enjoy so many restaurants and venues in Birmingham, but we now stop and think before we go over there because of the increasing violence. For those of you who may not know, Birmingham set a 20-year high in homicides last year. I was looking at the numbers on Monday of this week, and they are on pace to set another record in homicides. This is not what we want in our cities. This is not what we want in society. And for those of us who believe in the Second Amendment, I think it strengthens the reason we believe in it, the reason we think we have a constitutional right. We don't think, we know we have a constitutional right to carry and bear arms and to protect ourselves and our families. And this out-of-control violence in so many Democratic-controlled areas of our state, any tool we can give the Attorney General to prosecute and bring these people to justice, I think we need to do that. That bill's still out there, so keep an eye on it. I feel good about it passing. You heard some great information from Dale Jackson and from Jeff Poor, two friends and two guys that I appreciate very much. I mentioned that they are two of the best conservative talk show hosts in the state. I mean that. I think the world of both of them. We don't, as you see, we don't always agree on issues. If any of you follow Dale and myself on Twitter, you've seen Dale and I butt heads and go after stuff. Jeff and I sometimes disagree. We tend to agree a little more often, but even as conservatives, we can have these conversations. We can have these arguments. We can have these debates, and we can do it in a way that we walk away and we're still friends and we're still respectful of each other. And I think hearing each other's opinions strengthens our own. Okay. So really appreciate those guys coming on. Just so you know, they were scheduled for 1 30-minute segment. They both agreed to hang on for another 15 minutes just to help carry their inexperienced buddy over the finish line. So I appreciate that. But we're coming to an end here. Also, keep an eye on the Price Act. We don't know what's going to happen with that. You heard Jeff say he thinks it's been sent to another committee on the Senate side, but he thinks it has a chance of getting to a vote on the floor. I agree with that. I think the House is going to be far more difficult. You heard Stephanie Smith tell us Education Policy Committee heard it today, and they decided to punt for another week and talk about it again next week. That's another classic stalling tactic that you see quite often in Montgomery. Also, so many people in the House, it could be like herding cats. I don't think it'll get to a vote there. I don't think it's going to pass. I think it'll pass the Senate, but what is important right now is finding out where elected officials stand on school choice, because if they're not supporting it and they claim to be conservative, we've got 3 years to work on their replacement, and we can find a replacement, but we've got to go to work on it. All right, y'all, we're climbing down into the end of this show. Again, I thank you for tolerating me and letting me come in and share with you guys and visit with you. I hope that haven't done anything so bad that Phil won't invite me again. We're actually trying to make it easier for him to do that. Boomer and I are scheming on the technical side. But you're listening to Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram. I'm filling in for Phil Williams. Phil's on the road, and we're about to wrap this show up and send it into the next hour. Thank you all for attending and staying with us, and thank you for letting me come in and talk to you today.